has surrounded himself with people from the Obama administration, primarily some from the Clinton administration. They have a pronounced anti-China bent to them. The Democrat Party is also very anti-China, as is the leadership of the Republican Party.
Trump entered the Oval Office with the promise of making America great again. What transpired in the past 4 years, however, left the country in a far different position than what the outgoing U.S. president had pledged.
Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has held a two-day drill in central Iran. During the massive military exercises, the IRGC targeted and destroyed the Mach enemy vessels in the Indian Ocean with long-range ballistic missiles. The first stage of the large-scale military exercise, codenamed the Great Prophet 15, kicked off on Friday. IRGC units launched a barrage of surface-to-surface ballistic missiles, which were followed by operations by offensive bomber drones. The missiles, equipped with detachable warheads, are guided from outer space and are able to penetrate into the enemy's missile shield. On the second day of the drills, the IRGC's missiles detected and destroyed the targets as they were sailing 1,800 kilometers away in a remote area in the ocean. A mixed attack involving a new generation of surface-to-surface ballistic missiles and drones was carried out, and all designated targets were destroyed with pinpoint accuracy. The mocked strikes were launched with the presence of the chairman of the Chief of Staff of the Iranian Armed Forces, Major General Mohammad Bagheri, who said that Iran does not intend to attack any country. However, he said the country's armed forces will respond with all might in the shortest time if any adversary had malicious intentions toward the Islamic Republic.
Choosing a barrage of long-range missiles against naval targets illustrates that if the enemies of the Islamic Republic have ill intentions against our national interests, maritime trade routes and territory, they will come under missile strike and will be destroyed.
Donald Trump had attempted, through his sanctions, to withdraw the JCPOA, to weaken Iran. This has not happened, and these exercises certainly demonstrate that. He had wanted Iran in a position that any of those countries, the United States, Israel, or Saudi Arabia, could successfully invade and attack and conquer Iran. But by these exercises, military exercises that have recently been held, Iran has demonstrated that these sanctions have failed, that Iran remains a strong, powerful country dedicated to protecting its people, assisting its allies, and will certainly not surrender or give in to or be vulnerable to attack by its enemies.
The IRGC military exercises started shortly after the Iranian Navy finished its naval drills in the country's strategic southern waters. The drills are aimed at boosting the preparation and military prowess of the country's armed forces. The IRGC military exercise came after Iranian Navy's drills codenamed Ehtedar-e-Daryai 99. The two-day drills were held in the Sea of Oman and the Persian Gulf. A week prior to that, Iran held a massive drone maneuver across half of the country. These drills were launched amid heightened tensions between Iran and the U.S. in the final days of Donald Trump's presidency. Tensions have been simmering between the two countries in the past couple of months as the U.S. increases military presence in the region.
These exercises, I think, have been very important strategically for Iran in relation to the United States, because they have demonstrated, as I mentioned earlier, that the sanctions have not worked. So it is in the United States government under Joe Biden, it's in the U.S. government's interest to respect Iran, to re-enter the JCPOA, and to deal with Iran as another global citizen, trading with it, allowing trade with other countries, and working with it in a peaceful manner. These exercises have been a show of strength.
Last month, two U.S. B-52 bombers flew over the region. The move marked Washington's third dispatch of nuclear-capable bombers to the region in less than 2 months. The U.S. Navy had earlier announced the arrival of a nuclear-powered submarine in the Persian Gulf. The USS Georgia passed the Strait of Hormuz accompanied by two American warships, making it the first missile-loaded submarine of its kind to enter the region in 8 years. Analysts say these moves can signal Trump's intentions for triggering a conflict with Iran in his final days in office in order to distract attention from a string of failures in the past couple months. Many others say the outgoing U.S. president is simply seeking to complicate his successor's plans and coming back to the negotiating table with Iran over the nuclear deal. They say the U.S. president could be thinking about saddling President-elect Biden with some kind of military operation which could damage his efforts to come back to the JCPOA. Iran has time and again said its missile program is strictly for defensive purposes. However, Tehran says it will respond to any hostile action with a strong attack and maximum power.
As more evidence comes to light as to just who was involved in the protests that saw five people die in the storming of the US Capitol building, it seems that many of those involved were serving or ex-military staff, raising the question as to just how right-wing the US actually leans. So serious is the situation that the Pentagon has launched a probe into extremist views from within the US military complex, as the body finally comes to terms and accepts that racism is rooted deep within the American system. Since the Pentagon has now acknowledged the problem, this raises the question as to whether the activities of those serving in the military and were part of the mob that broke into the Capitol actually broke more than just one law in the process.
Absolutely. In fact, these military officers that have been complicit, and it's not just the military, not just the Department of Defense, but also elected officials such as Senator Hawley, and also the police officers who we have seen on video leading these so-called insurrectionists into the Capitol, supporting them, taking photos with them. These are absolutely illegal and pose a big problem for the ruling class, because these people, these institutions, are the armed wing of the ruling class. They are there to protect the bourgeoisie. They are there to protect these elected officials and their rule of law.
However, the allegations are nothing new, as the U.S. military has long been known to have racist views, as well as openly recruiting members of far-right or white supremacist groups. A report in the Guardian newspaper 6 months ago saw that the U.S. military had already conducted a report into racism, showing that over a third of personnel had witnessed acts of racism in the service, a figure that's risen by some 14% since Trump took office. It also became apparent that many leaders within the white supremacists and far-right groups in the U.S. were either serving or veterans of the U.S. military, hence clearly linking the military-like discipline within such groups to the actual military body within the United States. Yet, as mentioned, this is nothing new, as the U.S. has long displayed such traits. But what is apparent is the alarming and dramatic rise in such incidents, likely sparked by one very obvious catalyst. As Donald Trump finds himself ever more estranged from the grand old party and the presidency of the United States, his 4 years in the White House have left a legacy that no US president would be proud of, in particular when it comes to dealing with the diversity within his own nation. The endorsement of numerous acts of racial violence, discrimination and protest has left Trump leaving the White House having divided his nation. So many of his actions have actively encouraged and incited white supremacist groups to take a stand in the name of the so-called American Constitution. Trump also failed to deal with the Black Lives Matter protests following the murder of George Floyd by white police officers in Minneapolis. Had he done this promptly, it may just have given him another 4 years in the Oval Office. Trump has, in essence, created a divided and apartheid nation, something that incoming Joe Biden will no doubt have to reunite in his first term as president. However, with Trump very much still active in the background, the task is something that Biden must tackle head-on in order to resolve. With Trump having set the conditions to thrive, the question that now remains to be asked is whether Trump's legacy will lead to a civil or race war within the United States, whether he's in office or not.
Well, the empire is in decline, but it is not anywhere near ready to collapse. We might spend decades, we might spend maybe a year, but it will be time before the empire is collapsing and there will be those factions. The only future that the United States has is either a socialist one or a fascist one. And this battle will have to come eventually, but we're not anywhere near it yet. But the divisions are very deep.
Today I am calling on all Americans to...
Donald Donald Trump has undoubtedly been the most controversial president of the United States. He has managed to make sworn enemies and inspire diehard supporters all across a divided America. His term in office is almost over now, but not the mixed feelings and fierce controversy surrounding the outgoing U.S. president. This week, Trump set a new record. He became the first ever American commander-in-chief to be impeached for a second time by the House of Representatives. Trump now faces trial in the Senate for allegedly inciting a group of his extremist supporters to violently attack Congress last week. In the worst possible scenario, he could be barred from ever holding public office again. That would practically mean the end of his political career. Back in 2019, Trump was impeached over his dealings with Ukraine, but finally acquitted by the Senate. This time, things could look a lot different, as a growing number of his fellow Republicans have said openly that the embattled president must be convicted. Trump has never been so isolated. Many members of his inner circle have either abandoned the lame duck president or seem to have distanced themselves from him. The outgoing president has also lost his cherished Twitter account, and many large corporations are boycotting him. Trump could be wiped off the face of U.S. politics, but his legacy will live on as dangerous divisions deepen in American society.
His main legacy for America is that he's the only president in the history, in American history, to have been impeached twice. Through his mismanagement and his ignorance, he allowed the COVID-19 pandemic to ravage this country, to decimate the economy, and he's the worst president in American history.
This is expected to complicate things for Joe Biden from day one in office.
And we're in the middle of the once in several generations economic crisis.
The United States will soon have a new president. Joe Biden will take office in the coming days. His upcoming swearing-in ceremony will, however, be different from any past presidential inauguration, all thanks to Trump. Security concerns intensified over the past week. Federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies are taking extraordinary measures to secure the ceremony in the capital of the nation. Authorities say they have received information indicating the possibility of more violence during the inauguration. The FBI, for instance, says armed protests are being planned all across America. More than 20,000 National Guard troops will be among the forces that will try to secure President-elect Joe Biden's swearing-in ceremony. Security forces say they want to prevent a repeat of last week's deadly insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. The developments of the past weeks in the U.S. have raised serious questions about the credibility of American democracy. Was Biden democratically elected? Authorities have found no evidence of irregularities. So why does Trump still insist that the November election was stolen? And why do so many millions of Americans still believe what he says? Some observers believe the post-election chaos in the United States shows a growing lack of trust in the system and elections.
That's evidence that the experiment called democracy right now isn't working. The fact that, well, on the one hand, the fact that we expect there to be a orderly transition of government is a good thing. But what we have to go through to ensure that there is an orderly transition of government does not bode well for America.
Biden will probably try to improve the situation, but the divisions in the United States are too deep and cannot be mended overnight.
So tonight, I'd like to talk to you about our way forward.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
World Health Organization has criticized wealthy countries and pharmaceutical companies for pursuing their own coronavirus vaccine arrangements, even though such a nationalistic and competitive approach to inoculation threatens to magnify deadly global inequalities while prolonging the COVID-19 pandemic and associated economic crisis. We have prepared an article for you in this regard, written by Kenny Stencil Ryder. This article is published under the heading, Warning World is on Brink of a Catastrophic Moral Failure. WHO Chief Denounces Vaccine Hoarding by Rich Nations. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. I need to be blunt, the world is on the brink of a catastrophic moral failure, and the price of this failure will be paid with lives and livelihoods in the world's poorest countries. That ominous warning comes from the head of the World Health Organization, who on Monday, January 17th, criticized the wealthy countries and pharmaceutical companies for pursuing their own coronavirus vaccine arrangements, even though such a nationalistic and competitive approach on inoculation threatens to magnify deadly global inequalities while prolonging the COVID-19 pandemic and associated economic crisis. Even as they speak the language of equitable access, some countries and companies continue to prioritize bilateral deals, going around COVAX, driving up prices, and attempting to jump to the front of the queue, said WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom, speaking from the United Nations headquarters in Geneva at the start of the WHO Executive Board's week-long virtual meeting. This is wrong. The WHO-backed COVAX program is an international and cooperative project aimed at ensuring that the inhabitants of poor countries receive vaccines. Tedros explained that while the UN Health Agency has secured 2 billion doses from 5 producers, with options on more than 1 billion additional doses, its effort to achieve a just distribution of doses could be undermined by vaccine nationalism and the pharmaceutical industry's attempt to maximize profits. The leaders of poor countries are growing increasingly unsure about whether COVAX will get the vaccines it needs and whether high-income countries will keep the promises they have made, said Tedros, adding that the promise of equitable access is at serious risk. Most manufacturers have prioritized regulatory approval in rich countries where the profits are highest, rather than submitting full dossiers to WHO, Tedros continued. The WHO chief explained that inadequate information sharing by drug makers has impeded the agency's ability to green light more shots for emergency use, and called on vaccine producers to accelerate the approval process by providing full data for regulatory review in real time. Tedros noted that just 25 doses have been given in one lowest income country, Not 25 million, not 25,000, just 25. The WHO chief contrasted that figure with the 39 million doses that had been allocated in 49 higher-income countries. Alluding to the mistakes of the HIV and H1N1 pandemics, previous manifestations of global health inequality, Tedros called the COVID-19 response an opportunity to beat history, to write a different story. 40 years ago, a new virus emerged and sparked a pandemic. Life-saving medicines were developed, but more than a decade passed before the world's poor got access to them. 12 years ago, a new virus emerged and sparked a pandemic. Life-saving vaccines were developed, but by the time the world's poor got access, the pandemic was over. 1 year ago, a new virus emerged and sparked a pandemic. Life-saving vaccines have been developed. What happens next is up to us. Rich countries and pharmaceutical corporations teamed up to create 44 bilateral deals in 2020, and an additional 12 agreements have been signed so far this year, said Tedros. These side deals could postpone vaccine deliveries to poor countries and create exactly the scenario COVAX was designed to avoid, with hoarding, a chaotic market, an uncoordinated response, and continued social and economic disruption. It's right that all governments want to prioritize vaccinating their own health workers and older people first, Tedros continued. But it's not right that younger, healthier adults in rich countries are vaccinated before health workers and older people in poorer countries. Calling the rapid development of safe and effective coronavirus vaccines a stunning scientific achievement and much-needed source of hope, Tedros said that vaccines are the shot in the arm we all need, literally and figuratively. But we now face the real danger, he continued, that even as vaccines bring hope to some, they become another brick in the wall of inequality between the world's haves and have-nots, especially given how the recent emergence of new coronavirus variants has intensified the demand for doses. Not only does this me-first approach leave the world poorest and most vulnerable people at risk, it's also self-defeating, said Tedros. Ultimately, these actions will only prolong the pandemic, the restrictions needed to contain it, and human and economic suffering. Echoing critiques of vaccine apartheid and demands for a people's vaccine, the WHO chief called on all countries to work together in solidarity to ensure that within the first 100 days of this year, vaccination of health workers and older people is underway in all countries. Tedros urged pharmaceutical companies to devote a larger share of their product to the COVAX supply rather than prioritizing bilateral deals, and asked countries with bilateral contracts to share their own doses with COVAX, especially once they have vaccinated their own health workers and older populations. There will be enough vaccine for everyone, Tedros noted. But right now, we must work together as one global family to prioritize those most at risk of severe diseases and death in all countries.
things that he did at that time for this revolution, if today we can say, like, if Iran has the constitution today, it's because of the hard working of Shahid Beheshti, the dedication that he had on this work.
This is a natural principle, that people are affected by the rulers.
One thing very obvious about his character that made him more influential was his management skills. Not only management skills, but in the more modern sense of it, leadership qualities. He was truly a leader. And when it came to him actually leading the whole group of scholars who were working on the Iranian constitution, you can see the high capability of this person.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Assalamu alaikum to you dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is the teacher and analysis on the thoughts and works of the most outstanding Muslim thinkers all across the world of Islam. With me in the studio are two experts from the Islamic House of Qom, Dr. Murtaza Zazadeh and Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum, welcome to the show.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah, thanks for having me.
You're welcome, and Dr. Zazadeh, assalamu alaikum brother.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah. Good to be here.
So in the new series of the program, The Teacher, we have started discussing the thoughts and speeches of Sayyid Mohammad Husseini Beheshti, mainly known as Shahid Beheshti in Iran. We know that he was one of the greatest jurists, philosophers, and thinkers of contemporary Iran, who was assassinated, unfortunately, at the very beginning of the Islamic Revolution of Iran. As usual, we play one Persian audio file of this great scholar, and then we'll discuss content of his speech. Let's listen to this Persian audio file, along with the English translation, and then we'll continue our discussion.
Ma'ad, yani tak-tak ma insan-ha. Pas az
mar- Resurrection denotes a day when every one of us, after death, will face an infinite period of existence, by when every single human being has to come up against all their good and bad deeds they committed before their demise. Resurrection for us is not a matter of monotheistic free society or multi-class society. That multi-class society is the hell, and monotheistic free society the same heaven. No, this is not what the Quran introduces as heaven and hell. A multi-class society is terribly ugly, rejected, and just like the hell, but it is not the hell described in the Quran. A monotheistic free society is so beautiful and similar to heaven, but not the real heaven. We believe in resurrection as to be for every single human being. Everyone will face resurrection, and not that the whole society will move in a historical process to reach the heaven or that monotheistic free society. And that first one is the true resurrection for humanity.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This was the Farsi audio file of Shahid Beheshti talking about the concept of Ma'ad, along with the English translation. Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi, let's start with you. First of all, give us a definition of Ma'ad, as explained by Shahid Beheshti. It seems that he is talking about Ma'ad in terms of the paradise, the hell, and the heaven. The people in this world define it for themselves, but according to the reality of Islam, this is a very different concept which should be analyzed. What is Ma'ad exactly?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, as it is said, obviously, Ma'ad has come from the word Aud. Mm-hmm. There are three root words, basically. Whenever we have to analyze a word in Arabic language, we have to go towards the root word.
That's right.
Which generally means return. And that's what generally, like in the Islamic text, you can find Ma'ad as the return towards the origin or where we have come from. Basically, Ma'ad, what Shahid Beheshti is also referring to, is generally people think like paradise and hell is the Ma'ad, actually the resurrection or the Day of Judgment. Mm-hmm. Usually these are terms used for the Qiyamah.
That's right.
The Day of Judgment.
Yes.
But Ma'ad itself is returning back towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Obviously in Quran, Allah has said like, Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un, that we have come from Him and we will return to Him. We will be going back towards Him. So this is what generally like the Ma'ad is being translated. And obviously this is another phase because in the Quran we say Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen.
That's right.
The Lord of, or the nurturer of the worlds. So this is
right.
Another world.
Mm-hmm.
The world in which we are living, the phase in which we are living, this is one of the worlds.
That's right.
And hereafter is another world where we will, inshallah.
So this Ma'ad, in fact, happens, and this phase happens after the physical death.
After transferring from this place to
another place, because Shahid Beheshti talks about qabla marg, okay, before the death.
Before the death,
okay.
Because the death itself has different meanings in philosophy. Obviously, they have different definitions. Something like death means unexistence, non-existing.
Yes.
Like from existence, you go to the non-existing.
Mm-hmm.
This does not happen.
That's right.
Whereas in the Quranic text, inshallah, we will talk about that. That death means transferring from this place to another. That's
to another
why in some of languages, for example, in Urdu or Persian, they use the word intiqal.
Mm-hmm.
This person,
is transfer or transition.
This is transfer, yes. Transition or transfer from this world to the other
this
world.
This is a transition period. That's all right. Okay, Dr. Rezazadeh, what's your take on that? Ma'ad is a very controversial concept, but at the same time, it is accepted by the monotheistic religions. And somehow, in the other forms, the other religions, the non-monotheistic one, also talk about it. But Shahid Beheshti is really giving us a beautiful picture about Ma'ad in Islam.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. You know, Shahid Beheshti in this talk is explaining a misunderstanding about this very important concept. As you know, one of the big deviations and misunderstandings that was widespread, especially at some points in the contemporary history, was some wrong interpretation of religious concepts based on some of the new philosophical schools that later proved to be very incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
Like this one. Like this one. Because, you know, at some point, especially at the time that Shahid Beheshti is giving that lecture, the Marxist and communist philosophy had impressed so many people and thinkers. It was so influential in the society that they wanted to interpret all the religious concepts based on those principles. So Shahid Beheshti in his talk is referring to that big misinterpretation of the religious concept of Ma'ad, that is resurrection. So Ma'ad is something in the religion. When we refer to the sources, we find something very clear about that concept.
That's right.
But it was being interpreted by the followers or by those people who were influenced by the philosophy of Marxism or communism in a wrong way.
This is Jamei Tabaqati you are referring to?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
And Shahid Beheshti was clearly mentioning this name. So that misinterpretation is that the followers of communism, they claim that the ideal life that God has promised for the good people, what we call Ma'ad or resurrection on the Day of Judgment for the good people, is just a unified society that has no social classes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, because they depicted a society without any social classes.
Okay.
And they said that is the ideal society that the humankind can achieve. And then that is Ma'ad that God has talked in the Quran.
Okay, sorry, what's wrong with the social classes now that Shahid Beheshti is criticizing?
Shahid Beheshti says that definitely a society, you know, that is free from any discrimination or free from any classes is absolutely great.
That's right.
But it is absolutely wrong to say that the promised heaven or hell that God has talked in the Quran or in the scriptures is just that good worldly society that is depicted by the communists.
I think he's at the same time is criticizing liberal capitalism too of today's world, isn't it?
You know, any type of interpretation that is going to downgrade the religious concept into something merely worldly is rejected in this view. So while admitting that a society free from any discrimination is great and it is like heaven, but it is different from the ultimate heaven that we have been promised in another world. So this is what Shahid Beheshti is emphasizing on. And it needs to be very clear that he does not want to say that class-free society is bad. No, he doesn't want to.
This was what Karl Marx talks about the upper and the lower levels of the society. I mean, there are some people who are ruling the others, okay? Yes. We can say the masters ruling over the laborers of the society. But it seems that this is a phase after Ma'ad. It is heaven, isn't it?
What do you mean?
I mean, this Ma'ad that we are talking about refers to the same removal of the classes of the society?
No. The point is that these are two completely different things.
Oh.
You know, Ma'ad that we have in the Quran is actually returning to God. And it starts with the transmission of the humankind to the other world. We believe in this world, and then another world that comes after this physical world. And Ma'ad that we have in the Quran is about resurrection on the day of judgment or the life after death.
Okay.
But the Ma'ad that was being mentioned or but was being used by those people, they are talking about this worldly life.
Yes.
And Shahid Beheshti says that these are two different things. We should not mix them with each other.
That's right. Okay,
because
thank you very much.
The Ma'ad itself, like in the Islamic context, the final definition that we get, like the technical definition, that is the eternal life.
Mm-hmm.
After this life, we have an eternal life.
Okay.
And that is what referred as Ma'ad in Islamic text.
That's right.
So when you look at the eternal life and when you look at this
social freedom.
Freedom and all
different
those.
Different movements.
These are two different things.
That's right.
Because Ma'ad specifically is talking about the eternal life after this life, when we are transferred from this world to another world.
Okay.
Whereas in the philosophers and the socialists, they're talking about the social classes in this world. And that's what they're referring to hereafter.
That's all right.
If I made one point on this, if we have time. You know, one thing that I wanted to add to this is that we should not think that this can only happen about wrong philosophical schools, you know, because I said that Shahid Beheshti is mainly talking about that wrong interpretation based on a philosophical school. But actually, the reality is that this is happening every day in our lives in different forms.
That's right.
And the reason is that, I mean, the root of this is that it happens because of being too much attached to this material world and not being familiar with the teachings of the prophets.
That's right.
So when someone or some people are too much attached to this world, they sometimes intentionally and sometimes unintentionally try to downgrade, as I mentioned before, everything, every religious concept, every spiritual concept to something which is merely worldly and physical.
That's right.
And that's a big deviation.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Azadan Said Mohsen Naqvi. There are so many questions unanswered regarding the topic of Ma'ad. I will pose them, inshallah, upcoming session of the program. It was very kind of you. And these audio files and the Persian files, we can say, are just an excuse for us in order to discuss some of the concepts, some of the important concepts regarding Islamic theology, which are important. If they are discussed by a scholar like Shahid Beheshti, it is really, really great for us. And we try to use them for our dear listeners as a document, as explained by a scholar who was himself active in a society and tried to apply it in the society addressing the young generation of his time. It was very kind of you, Dr. Azadan Said Mohsen Naqvi, and dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for listening to this episode of the program, The Teacher. Do not forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/en/Call of Islam Radio. Also our YouTube page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanat.
A teacher, the teacher of teachers. He changed the world for the better and made us better creatures. Oh Allah, we've shamed ourselves, we've strayed from Al-Mu'allim. Surely we've wronged ourselves, what will we say in front of it? Ya Mu'allim, peace be upon you, truly you are our teacher.
Nearly a third of people who were discharged from hospitals in England after being treated for COVID-19 were readmitted to hospitals within 5 months, and almost one in eight died, according to a new study. The research, which is still to be peer-reviewed, also found a higher risk of problems developing in a range of organs after hospital discharge in those younger than 70 and ethnic minority individuals. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian journalist Natalie Grover. The piece is titled, Almost 30% of COVID patients in England readmitted to hospital after discharge, according to new study. Stay with us for more of Natalie Grover's article. Nearly a third of people who were discharged from hospitals in England after being treated for COVID-19 were readmitted to hospital within 5 months, and almost one in eight died, according to a new study. The research, which is still to be peer-reviewed, also found a higher risk of problems developing in a range of organs after hospital discharge in those younger than 70, and also in ethnic minority individuals. There's been so much talk about all these people dying from COVID-19, but death is not the only outcome that matters, said Dr. Charlotte Summers, a lecturer in intensive care medicine at the University of Cambridge, who was not involved in this new study. The idea that we have that level of increased risk in people, particularly young people, it means we've got a lot of work to do. There is no consensus on the scale and impact of long COVID, but scientists have described emerging evidence as concerning. According to recent figures provided by the Office for National Statistics, ONS, a fifth of people in England still have coronavirus symptoms 5 weeks after being infected, half of whom continue to experience problems for at least a further 12 weeks. Thanks to a better understanding of the disease and new therapies, COVID-19 hospital death rates have fallen dramatically, said study researcher Kamlesh Kunti, a professor from University of Leicester who sits on SAGE and is also a member of the independent SAGE group of experts. The findings of this new study are based on data from the Office of National Statistics and general practitioners in England. A total of 47,780 individuals who had a hospital episode between 1st of January 2020 and 31st of August 2020 with a primary diagnosis of COVID-19 were compared with a control group who did not have COVID-19. Of the 47,780 individuals who took part in the new research, 29.4% were readmitted to hospital within 140 days of discharge, and 12.3% of them died. The rate of readmission was 3.5 times greater and a death rate 7 times higher than those in the control group, the researchers found. The risk of post-discharge illness, such as respiratory conditions, diabetes, and problems with the heart, problems with liver and kidneys in COVID-19 patients was higher compared with the control group. That risk was also greater in younger and ethnic minority individuals compared with those aged 70 and above and white people. This matters. Long COVID at this level of morbidity and new disease is absolutely as important as the number of people dying, said Dr. Charlotte Summers of the University of Cambridge. Respiratory disease was diagnosed in 14,140 individuals of the COVID-19 cases, that's 29.6% of the cases following discharge, with 6,085 of the diagnoses in patients that had no history of respiratory conditions. If this percentage of people who came to hospital end up with chronic respiratory disease, Dr. Charlotte Summers said, the National Health Service has just got an enormous burden that it didn't have before.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The reason why the Islamic Republic is opposed to negotiating with the U.S.
This is part of a televised speech delivered on July 31st, 2020 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the supreme leader of the Islamic Revolution on the occasion of Eid al-Adha.
The reason why I say that we will not negotiate with the U.S. is that it is pointless. Of course, they will benefit from negotiations. The poor thing, the old man who holds office in the U.S., seems to have made promotional use of negotiating with North Korea. He wants to take advantage of these negotiations either for electoral or non-electoral purposes. In any case, he has personal interests, but beyond these matters, The U.S. political system claims to be pursuing vital issues in the case of the Islamic Republic of Iran. In other words, they say that we should forsake our defense capabilities and our regional and national power. Well, this is not possible. An honorable person who is interested in preserving the country's interests will not give in to these demands. This is what negotiation means. This is the reason why I am against negotiating with the US. Otherwise, we will negotiate with the entire world except for the US and the fake Zionist regime.
Your light and love, all I see, nothing more I'd ever want to need. My Lord, protect me from dishonor. Grant me faith to be stronger.
Having relations, negotiating, and interacting with others, and we have no problem with it. This is America's problem with us. So this is another point. Sanctions are definitely curable, but the cure is not to retreat. So what is the cure? The cure for sanctions is only and solely reliance on national capabilities. We should preserve every capability that we have in this respect.
Alhamdulillah, Alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
Around the world with reporters.
Quds, the axis of Muslims' unity. This is the theme of the International Webinar of Parliaments Supporting Palestine. Organized by Iran's parliament, the event was attended by parliament speakers and deputy speakers from Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Yemen, Indonesia, and other Muslim countries, as well as representatives of Palestine's resistance movements, to express their solidarity with Palestinians in their resistance against Israel's occupation. Delegates condemned Sudan, the UAE, and Bahrain for their normalization of ties with Israel, calling it a betrayal to the Muslim community.
It's a bitter tragedy to see that Palestinians' houses are demolished on a daily basis. 2 million Palestinians in Gaza are living in a prison-like area, and 5 million members of the Palestinian diaspora are not given their legitimate right to return to their homeland. What's even more tragic is that some Muslim countries have given the seal of approval to Israel's crimes by establishing political and economic ties with the occupying regime.
We call on the parliaments of all Muslim and Arab countries to take serious measures against the Israeli occupation of Palestine, and especially the unwelcome deal of the century that seeks to change the identity of Palestinians and their land.
The Arab-Israeli normalization came as part of outgoing U.S. President Donald Trump's so-called deal of the century. The plan, which triggered a storm of condemnations from Palestinians, refers to Jerusalem as Israel's undivided capital and recognizes Israeli sovereignty over large parts of the West Bank. While the controversial deal was championed by Trump, observers say the incoming U.S. administration is not likely to change course on Palestine.
For me as a Palestinian and the previous experience of all American presidents, they are, and especially Biden, he's having a big heritage of literature to support the security of Israelis. And he did nothing when he was the vice president during Obama's time for the Palestinian, except that speech and rhetorics, and we have gained nothing.
Palestinian ambassador to Iran says resistance remains the only way ahead of his people against Israel's occupation, since he believes that the path of dialogue does not work with Israel.
We have to unite our forces to be strong front, and all the Arabs and Islamic world will stand behind us. No other way, because they have proved always that they are not loyal to negotiations or to any other settlement with them.
Although the Arab-Israeli normalization infuriated the Muslim world, commentators say it should not come as a surprise, and it's only a revelation of their long-existing covert ties. This is why they believe the move will not lead to a seismic shift in regional power equations.
Delegates at the webinar underlined that Palestine remains the top priority and the innermost issue of the Muslim world, adding that Israel and its Western supporters have spared no effort in derailing that priority. They called on Muslim countries to stay united, as they believe this is the main counterforce against Israel's expansionist agenda. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
...2021 has so far been miserable for millions of business people and their staff across the 27-country European Union. Lots of outlets are being forced to close their doors to prevent the spread of COVID-19, with only essential retailers allowed to remain open.
You see that we have stricter measures than even a few months ago all around Europe.
Finance ministers from the 19-nation Eurozone have just concluded their first meeting of 2021 and warned that social inequality in the EU has yet to peak. Government and personal debt is rising due to the pandemic. We are reminded that the bloc has pre-existing economic problems. For example, in Greece, youth unemployment was running at almost 50% even before COVID-19 came along.
Do not forget the situation in Italy, where proper tax system is not in place, and France is facing enormous problems of unemployment.
The EU's spending watchdog, the European Court of Auditors, has been examining the bloc's initial response to the pandemic. During an online interview, a spokesperson told us that better cooperation is required.
Indeed, the EU has to learn lessons going forward, both to react better to the COVID crisis, but indeed to pandemics in the future, because pandemics are going away. There will be another one in the future.
EU finance ministers say COVID-19 recovery funding needs to be released without delay and spent wisely by member states. Meanwhile, the bloc's crucial vaccination program is being rolled out too slowly, many health experts argue. Because the bloc is still in the middle of a health emergency and the start of a new economic crisis, analysts say the EU's response will not be fully assessed by citizens until the pandemic passes. Based on current information, perhaps their verdict will not be good. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
An international rights group says that Israel, as an occupying power, must provide coronavirus vaccines to Palestinians. According to a press release by Human Rights Watch on Sunday, the Israeli authorities should provide COVID-19 vaccines to Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and the Gaza Strip. Human Rights Watch regional director Omar Shakir said that while Israel has already vaccinated more than 20% of its citizens, including Jewish settlers in the occupied West Bank, it has not committed to vaccinate Palestinians living in the same occupied territory under its military rule. Israeli authorities had, as of January 14, 2021, provided doses of the vaccine to more than 2 million Israeli citizens. close to 150,000 coronavirus infections and over 1,500 deaths have been reported in the occupied West Bank and the blockaded Gaza Strip so far.
Article 56 of the 4th Geneva Convention requires Israel as an occupying power to adopt and apply the prophylactic and preventive measures necessary to combat the spread of contagious diseases and epidemics. The